Hi, I'm Dave King.
And I'm Alicia Reed. And you're listening to Unscripted, the official podcast of Rotary Magazine in Great Britain and Ireland.
Welcome to the October episode of Unscripted, which we are recording from studios in Swindon with Swindon 105.5. And Dan's the man, Dan's the tech man who's pushing all the right buttons and making sure we keep to time.
So we welcome you to an episode of Unscripted, which is going to have a distinctly European theme.
So how are you looking forward to today, Lucy? Did you have a good drive over from Newquay?
It was a little bit mizzly on the way up.
Mizzly?
Mizzly. It's that really fine rain that you don't realise it's soaking you as you walk along. And then you just realise you're drenched. So it was mizzly, and then the sun shone as I got into Swindon.
I spent last week on holiday in Cornwall, in Foy, and it poured every day. So
sorry about that.
We've also got in the studio with us Peter Aldridge. Peter from the Rotary Club of Doncaster. Hello, welcome.
Hello there. Nice to be here.
And you haven't come that far to the Swindon?
No, I've done a fairly circuitous route here, but not too far, no.
So we've got Peter Aldridge, who's from the Rotary Club of Doncaster, and he's going to be talking about the legend that is Frank Molloy. We've also got an interview with Darren Morgan. Now, he is an amazing man, a Rotarian from Galway on the west coast of Ireland, who since May has been swimming around the Emerald Isle.
But first up, we head to Zurich in Switzerland, where Rotary International has its Europe and Africa office. And in fact, it's one of six international Rotary offices. And that's Brazil, Japan, Korea, India and Australia. And the man who looks after all of this for Rotary's international operations is Marco Nicosia. Welcome to you, Marco.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be with you. And special greetings to all of you from the sunny Zurich. So we have no rain.
No mizzle.
No.
Do you know what mizzle is?
Yes.
You do now?
Yes. Yes, I do. Sometimes we have it also here. So. Oh.
Yes. Is there a German or Swiss word for mizzle? What do you say in Zurich?
Oh, Nieselregen.
Oh. Nieselregen.
Nieselregen. So it's a very fine rain, right?
So intriguing, your role at Rotary there.
Well, I have the privilege since 2010 to manage the Europe-Africa office here in Zurich. Really, to manage my staff here, I have 45 staff members with 22 different nationalities, so it's like a little Rotary World here in Zurich, or right in the office. The area is so vast and so big, so that among us we speak 27 different languages. So I have to manage all this, including 300,000 Rotarians that we are responsible for.
That is such diversity. That must be so exciting to work with so many different people. How many clubs across Europe are you actually responsible for?
We are having about 9,000, more than 9,100 Rotary clubs, Europe and Africa together. And I would say so something like 7,000 are in Europe. So 75% is taken care of us. So from here, and then the rest is Africa and the Middle East as well.
So as you're travelling around, in UK for instance, we have in many of the more traditional clubs, you might toast the sovereign. What I'm intrigued with is, as you've travelled around, what has been the most fun tradition that you found in a Rotary club?
Well, first of all, the higher you are, the less you travel in the position here. It's more my staff who travels, but I have to say that actually not in Europe, actually more in America, that they go for the national anthem before they start the meeting and they pray, which for instance in Switzerland I haven't seen that nowhere at all. So and then I was once in a Rotary club of Tenerife, and then they have a saying. But it's not a praying, it's like a Rotary saying. And they asked me, Marco, please go ahead. And I said, no, I have no clue what you guys are doing. I said, you don't know this? I said, no, it's particular in your area. So sometimes hotels think what they do, it's everywhere is also done the same way, but it's not. So
no, well, you must have great fun discovering all of these different traditions and ways.
Yes.
And how do you bridge that gap between the different traditions, cultures? The diversity must be so vast.
Indeed, it is. And my staff is already diverse, and that's why the reason we have to adapt to the clientele needs and to understand them. So my staff and myself, we have to be very empathic. So our own culture, sometimes it works if I talk to a Rotarian in Switzerland, or if I talk to a Rotarian in Italy or Spain. That's my roots. My father was from Italy, my mom, she came from Spain, and they met in Switzerland, and then I was born. So I have these three cultures in me, and therefore that helps me to understand the Latins, right? So, but then also to be empathic with the Scandinavian countries or the African countries, completely different. But empathy is very important for us, for all of us here, actually.
And here we are, 100 years since Rotary first took root in Central Europe. So what does this centenary mean to Rotary International?
Well, it means a huge success story, right? Yeah. 100 years to create a Rotary in Europe and to grow in Europe. It's absolutely amazing. To see that also the... Even different challenges, World War One, World War Two, this is something that I can say it's and still disappearing from a certain part of Europe, but then coming back again in the late 80s, and then to grow again. It's really a success story for the and the office being here 100 years. It's amazing.
Do you have a feel of how Rotary was in the very beginning? So we're talking 1925, really only a few years after the end of World War One. Do you know how those early clubs actually helped the population around them at the time?
Well, what I can say is obviously I did not witness that, right? So I had some age, but I wasn't there. But I can say that the first Rotary Club, Continental Rotary Club, was in the early 20s, and that was the Rotary Club of Madrid. So a lot of people think there was Paris, but Paris came afterwards, and then it grew further and further and so on. And especially also in the East European part, it grew before the Second World War, but then due to the Second World War and the former Soviet Union, then Rotary was forbidden in these countries. And only in the late 80s, these countries came back, as well as, for instance, Spain. Spain was growing as well, but during Franco's time, dictatorship Franco, Rotary was also forbidden in Spain, and they came back late 70s, well, early 80s as well.
It's shocking to think that Rotary could be forbidden in any
yes.
culture. I'd love to know if they were secretly still sort of meeting behind closed doors, or they obviously mm-hmm. kept the thought alive and started it again later.
I was going to say, Marco, that I think, wasn't it around the time of, in Germany, around the time of Hitler, that there were issues, weren't there, with Rotary clubs, and they were closed quite quickly just before the start of the Second World War. And it took time afterwards for them to start getting back on their feet?
Well, from my knowledge, now such like this in detail, I'm not aware of. I only know that some Rotarians, famous Rotarians in Germany, they had to leave Germany and they came into Switzerland as refugees, like a very famous Rotarian, and was called Thomas Mann. He had from the top of Munich, if I'm not mistaken, come to Switzerland, but it could well be that Rotary clubs in Germany were closed as well, but known more, it's like Spain and the Eastern European countries.
And thinking to the future now with youngsters, I mean, how do you find that across Europe they engage with the young people?
Well, the question is, if I ask you a question again, what is young people? Is it until 18? Is it until 30?
Okay, so what we're always trying to do is to engage people younger and younger. So, for instance, my son, I always involved him from being 8, 9. And so it's how do we actually engage children so that they're growing up with that awareness of charity, service and Rotary?
Well, we have an amazing program around the world. It's called the Interact Clubs. That is until 18, from 12 to 18, actually. And then from onwards that, they can become Rotarians already, or Rotaractor as well. And this is in different countries or areas, it's more success and also less success. I can tell you that, for instance, a huge success in Interact and Rotaract is in Italy, for instance. Another country is amazing about this is Uganda. So these two countries, they really are the top of the spear.
And of course, we're always trying to engage young professionals these days, aren't we? Looking to corporate members and really trying to lower the age of the average Rotarian across the world. So do you find that any particular country is more successful at engaging with professionals?
Well, young professionals, right?
That's yes.
In general, we are mainly old professionals. Yes, I have to point out Africa. It's very strong in general. The average age is way lower in Africa than in Europe. And as well as now I can say, for instance, in Italy, you're doing a lot to gain a new Rotarians, young Rotarians.
Is there one particular project or story that really shines out and stands out for you in your time and your role?
There are many projects and so on. If I would mention two or three. First of all, the famous Project of Scale, where Rotary International, the foundation, is funding. These are projects that takes 2 to 3 years, runs or 3 to 4 years. And we have added, the budget amount is a minimum of $2 million. And there are one is in Zambia against malaria, then Nigeria mother child health to prevent that young women and the baby pass away during birth process. And then we have also Egypt against cervical cancer. So this is also something that is, but they are big projects, right? So this is something that, and now I go to a very small one and but for me, I'm very proud of it. It's from my own club. I'm Rotarian at the Rotary Club Zurich Circle International. That's a club that I chartered in, during the pandemic. We are about now 49 club members, and it's exactly at the airport of Zurich. So I have a lot of members from the Rotary Club, from the airport, and we, and if I'm not mistaken, we create the very first Rotary Lounge project. So if you are flying out or coming to Zurich Airport as a passenger, you have not to be a frequent flyer, you have not to be business or first class traveler, just a Rotarian. You go to the Aspire Lounge and you say you are Rotarian and you get access to the lounge. So, but you need to, you get full access. There you have, in the lounge itself, you have a special Rotary corner for Rotarians where they can meet, and this was a guest book and so on. But you pay an entry fee, and the entry fee is 30 Swiss francs. Now, I don't know now exchange rate with the pound, but let's say 25 pounds to get to enter the lounge. So I would like to rephrase this sentence again. You are not paying, because that's not the meaning of Rotary. You are donating £25, and you support our worldwide main humanitarian project, Polio Plus. And with that is like, you do good for yourself. You get in, you get spoiled, you have full access. I can tell you, you never will eat so cheap at the airport of Zurich. Mm-hmm. And you have access to champagne and food and everything. And on the other hand, you do good, and thanks that you enter the lounge, 50 children are getting vaccinated.
Marco, we're going to take that as an invitation.
Yes, absolutely. Most welcome. Or perhaps an idea to also have this implemented in your country.
Marco, you've got to have some chocolate in that lounge, haven't you?
Oh, a lot of chocolate. It's a Swiss lounge.
It's a perfect lounge. Marco, thank you ever so much for that. Just by way of context, because Marco there was talking about Madrid and Paris. So when we think about Rotary's history, we think 1905 Chicago, Paul Harris Chicago, and Rotary growing in North America and Canada. And then basically Rotary was exported across the Atlantic to Dublin and Belfast in 1911. We had the Rotary Club of London in 1912, and then the British Association of Rotary Clubs was founded in 1914. So that gives us a bit of context about where we are in terms of the history. Marco then brings in the early part of the 1920s, after the First World War, Madrid and Paris. And now really for the next part of the story, we're going to look at some other European capitals. And I'm really delighted to introduce Peter Aldridge from Doncaster Rotary Club. Now, if you read the September issue of Rotary magazine, you would have seen the story of Frank Molloy, an amazing man who exactly 100 years ago was the driving force behind the creation of not one, not two, but three Rotary clubs in three European capitals. Now, Frank was also a member of Doncaster Rotary Club in South Yorkshire. And Peter, as a kindred spirit, I know you know a lot about the man and have recently been out to Vienna. But first up, what can you tell us about Frank Molloy?
Well, I think first, Dave, it's important to say, I mean, this is an absolutely remarkable story of how a Yorkshire Rotary Club could help set up and the Rotary clubs in three European capitals, as you say, Budapest, Vienna and Prague. And when you really think about it, those Rotary clubs are now the mother clubs and the grandmother clubs of a lot more clubs. So Doncaster, in a way, is not only the mother clubs of the three capitals Rotary clubs, but maybe you could say the grandmother club and the great grandmother club of a lot more, right across Europe and beyond. Now, I really think it is a remarkable story. As for Frank, we believe he has an Irish background. We're not quite sure. His background is quite mysterious. We know that he was a pilot in the First World War, and we think he served with the Royal Flying Corps, which in 1918 became the Royal Air Force. It clearly had a lot of links in high places, because we can tell that by what he did. He wasn't a founding member of the Rotary Club of Doncaster. Doncaster was founded in 1922. But by 1925, he'd led a delegation across to Central Europe of Doncaster Rotarians, about 15 people, we believe. And he was instrumental in setting up Rotary clubs, as you said, in Prague, Vienna and Budapest. And we do think that, you know, it was an amazing thing to do. He obviously had a wide knowledge of Europe. And during the course of the First World War, I think it develops a lot of links as well. And we've actually got a picture of him in a very battered plane with the Rotarians getting out and flying to Vienna. And so, he knew what he was doing. He was instrumental, as I said, in setting up the Rotary clubs in those three capitals in 1925, yeah. Which is, as you say, 100 years ago. But he also, following that, visited Vienna with another group of Doncaster Rotarians in 1929. He presented the three presidents of the Rotary clubs with presidents' medals, presidents' jewels, very ornate chairs for the presidents to use as well. I think those chairs have actually disappeared in the course of time. Probably the Second World War didn't help. But when I visited Vienna this June, they were still using the president's jewel that Frank presented them. And they were very proud to do that. And they also gave me a little booklet that had been produced, and on the front page is a picture of the jewel. So they're very keen to continue with the links with Doncaster. Frank was behind all this.
But why? Why Frank?
Why Frank? Well, as I say, I think he was slightly mysterious. I mean, he had a lot of connections, and I mean, the story goes that he was asked to come across. Frank became president of the Rotary Club of Doncaster in 1929, but he was only president for a matter of weeks before he took a government post in Switzerland.
I can see Marco nodding there.
Well, we don't know what that government post was or what he actually did. We know he continued to have links with Doncaster Rotary after that. We don't know too much about him, but he was certainly very influential, and he did a lot of good things.
Marco, you can help me with my German here. Apparently, Frank was known as the Gründungsbeauftrager, the foundation agent, Gründungsbeauftrager.
Well, it sounds something like German, but
sehr schlecht.
Sehr schlecht. Nein. Gründungsbeauftragter. Yeah.
And the Doncaster Club was known as the Paten Club.
Yes, correct.
The Father Club.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
And so, in terms of, I was just looking at the date. So actually, we are close on the 100 years anniversary. This is the October podcast, yeah. And I think October
the 31st.
Is for Budapest, is it not?
The October the 31st, as I understand, is for Vienna as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But certainly this time of year, I think both Vienna and Budapest, it's in October.
Yeah, the elder centenary charter, though, in June.
Mm.
But the clubs don't automatically stick to the anniversary date.
Sure.
With the year.
And just bringing Marco in here while we're talking about that, why at this time, you mentioned Madrid, you mentioned Paris, why was Rotary ripe for, or why was Europe ripe for Rotary at this particular time in the 1920s? What was it about then where people in those cities, big capital cities, thought that Rotary could do some good in those countries?
Well, I think it's also not only the countries. I think it's also to come together and to network and fellowship. I think we have also to understand that at that time, it was difficult times after the First World War, and then just before the Second World War. This is something what now I'm saying, that they came together, perhaps they could do something good in the society and to grow and build up. So, and the mission or the philosophy of Rotary matched with their personal wish to help and to network at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the modern day era, we're seeing in Ukraine, for example, where Rotary is growing because there's that trust in Rotary, and maybe 100 years back, there was that perceived, I don't know what you think here, Peter, that perhaps, you know, the reason that Europe was receptive to Rotary was because of what it stood for, the values that it had, the trust element.
Yeah, I guess after the First World War, I mean, Europe was in a real mess, wasn't it? The Austro-Hungarian Empire had collapsed in 1918. Mm. Italy had taken part of that, and the Central Powers, there was a lot of poverty, hyperinflation, turmoil. So maybe it was, you know, an ideal time for Rotary to get in there and try to influence things.
Yeah. And as far as Doncaster Rotary is concerned, it has, for the past 100 years, been very close to all three clubs, even though they've all three been through various difficulties because of what's been happening on the domestic
well,
fronts.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had communism, didn't we, for Prague and Hungary and Austria. We had the Second World War, and Hitler has already been mentioned. So, yes, there's been a lot of change. But they're all working perfectly well now. They've all been reformed.
And so you've been to the clubs?
Yes, I have, yeah.
So just describe it, you know, to anyone who's not been to an Austrian Rotary Club, to a Czech Rotary Club, what is Rotary like in these clubs? Do they do things differently than we do in the UK?
Well, I think they're fairly informal in terms of the meeting, but they're very active as well. I mean, as I understand, Vienna, for instance, has about 150 members, and they're very influential members of the society as well. So they, you know, a lot of things happens. For instance, the charter of our events I went to was held at the Liechtenstein Garden Palace, and it was
wow.
We don't do things like that in Doncaster. No. So it was an amazing event.
What's the big palace in Doncaster called?
the palace in Doncaster, the moat house.
But you must have been, I mean, you must have been quite honoured, I guess, to be part of those centenary celebrations.
Yes, I was honoured to receive the invitation from President Andreas. Mm. And I was able to give him a commemorative duel celebrating our 100 years link, which he took, and I was very pleased to accept.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, it was an amazing event, and I wouldn't have missed it. The people were so friendly. I gave a short address, largely in English, I have to say, because my German doesn't exist really. but the only other person I think that gave an address in English was the president of the Rotary Club of New York.
Oh wow!
So you know, it was well attended, and I think everything went well, and that obviously, as you would expect, the hospitality was amazing. You know, the food was amazing. Mm. There was dancing quartets.
In Vienna, of course.
You were waltzing around the room. But you couldn't fault it in any way, their hospitality and their commitment to Rotary.
Sure.
And the things that they do.
And talk about hospitality, I was in Prague in April. Yeah. I visited the Rotary Club there. Hospitality, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Desserts, fantastic, top of the bill.
Yeah.
You've also been to Prague. What did you make of the Rotary in the Czech capital?
Well, it's some time since I've been there, but we were well received, and Prague and Vienna have also visited Doncaster on a number of occasions. So it's a two-way event. Yeah, it is good to have that link and for that link to continue.
Now, I know for the purposes of the article in the magazine, there was a book that you kindly lent me, which is a sort of potted history of Frank Malloy and the Rotary Club.
Yeah.
And it talks there about the time Paul Harris came to Doncaster. It was like the showground somewhere, and there were lots of people came out in their fancy hats and dresses and stuff.
I think he came across from Hull, didn't he, if I remember. I don't know why he'd been to Hull, but he came across, and there's a story about being driven at high speed, and he didn't think, you know, the British did that. So, he did visit the club, yes.
Yeah. Alicia, I know you've got close ties with Doncaster yourself, haven't you?
Yes, indeed. Born and bred there, and I started my Rotary journey there 10 years ago as a Rotarian.
Yeah, we trained Alicia to be a Rotarian.
They did indeed.
How did you do that?
With difficulty.
How did you manage to get Alicia into Rotary?
I don't know, you need to ask her, but I think she was an ideal member, and we were certainly promoting female membership as well, and Alicia came along, and she was a great asset. And she still helps us now, to be honest. So.
I do indeed, yes. I actually, how did I become a Rotarian? Somebody just asked me. But I have to say, I thought Rotary was a rowing club. I didn't.
A rowing club?
Yes, because there used to be this Rotary symbol on this shed next to the River Don, where I used to go to the park as a kid. And I saw people putting boats in and out, and I thought it was a rowing club.
I've not heard that story before.
I know when I go to Rotary headquarters in Ulster near Stratford-upon-Avon, often there are phone calls that come through, people asking to get through to fix their Rotary watches.
Right.
Yeah. But I've never heard of that. Marco, in Switzerland, when people mention the word Rotary in the watch capital of the world, what do people think?
Well, first of all, to be honest, the classic one is what? They haven't heard anything. Then the ones that they know, they say, oh, it's only men organization, why it's gay men. Or the other one is also that it's a very elite. But we are trying more and more to change this wrong picture of us, right? So which we are not, yeah, but this is mainly in Switzerland, like, oh, that's the club for the rich people.
Yes, we're all actively trying to change the perception of Rotary. But Marco, had you heard the story of Frank Malloy before?
No, I did not. The only thing was, for this meeting here, we just checked how many clubs in Europe are celebrating 100 years anniversary. And believe it or not, there are 28 clubs this year celebrating 100 years anniversary. Mm.
What an achievement. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. So how important do you think that Rotary's role was 100 years ago in rebuilding Europe after the war?
Oh, I think it was very keen, very important. I was there were about 42 or 43 Rotarians helping to create, to write the charter of the UN. We as organization, we are the only service club who has a permanent seat at the UN, and we have a very special relationship. So, you know, that what this the UN was created after the Second World War. So with the help of 42 or 43 Rotarians, so a very important impact from Rotary, yes.
That legacy remains 100 years on in terms of Rotary and its ability to carve peace. That has to be one of our central aims. Marco, thank you for that. Let's stay European, shall we, and move from mainland Europe to Ireland to meet an amazing man, Darren Morgan. Now, at Unscripted, we like to meet extraordinary people doing remarkable things. And today, we're diving, quite literally, into the story of a man who has taken on one of the most grueling challenges imaginable, swimming around the entire coast of Ireland. Earlier this week, I caught up with Galway Rotarian Darren Morgan, an open water swimming whose round Ireland adventure is not just about testing human endurance, but it's also about raising awareness and support for important causes. Now, over the past 6 months since May, Darren has faced freezing waters, fierce Atlantic currents, and the mental and physical demands that come from such an epic journey. And along the way, he's drawn inspiration from Rotary's values of service, resilience, and community. So here's Darren on a dodgy mobile phone connection talking about his epic challenge. Darren Morgan, welcome to the Unscripted podcast. A man who is swimming around Ireland. Where the hell are you today?
So we're actually just in a place called Youghal, County Cork. So it's on the south coast of Ireland. It's a big milestone for us because it signifies the last three counties of Ireland, Cork, Kerry and Clare, and the last province. Progress has been good and we're keeping good spirits up, you know.
So this is basically a swim clockwise around Ireland, which started in Galway last May, and it's a total of about 1,000 miles, is that so?
Yeah, 1,000 miles, yeah.
So what was the thinking behind the swim in the first place?
So I always had an inkling and a kind of a dream, as you would, of such, to do this, and it wouldn't leave me. Sometimes I wish it would have, you know, because it was such all-encompassing, and I knew how much that actually went into it, not just swimming wise but also logistics, monetary funding, everything, all aspects of it. When you actually thought of it, it would overwhelm you, you know. So what I did was I put my head down and I did a lot of different challenges, and I kind of put myself through a gauntlet of things to kind of test myself to be able to kind of even contemplate doing something like this. Not saying I passed all of them, and a lot of them were failures, you know, but you kept coming back and you kept showing up and you kept improving and trying to get your processes and your systems and your mindset and your body right. This year felt right and we decided to go for it, and I was lucky enough to assemble a really good team around me and with people that were very skilled with boats and things like that. So it just turned out very good in that sense.
So you're swimming in stages. How long are you swimming each day? How far are you swimming each day?
About 6 hours. The longest swim we done was 35 kilometres. On average, over all of our swims, our average is about 16 to 20k. In around that ballpark is where we like to kind of hit for each swim, you know.
Sure. What sort of conditions are you facing with each swim?
Well, it's so changeable. Like, obviously, Ireland has three ocean seas around it. So you have the Atlantic Ocean to the west, to the east you have the Irish Sea, and then on down the south you have the Celtic Sea. So they're three different seas, and they bring different weather systems, different energies, different tides, different currents, different oceanic life. So we've had to deal with huge swells on the Atlantic and west coast, going up the Mayo, and especially across Donegal Bay, which is, you know, we were 20 miles off the land at any time. For a small 18-foot boat that we were accompanied with at times. You really need the right conditions and the right planning and the right team around you. And then now we're on the south coast and the challenges here again are big swells, and that met with wind is not favourable for swimming. So it's really you're at the peril of the weather, you know.
And you're saying, Dara, there that you're being accompanied by a boat. It's quite a historic, a traditional Irish boat.
It's a Galway hooker, or, you know, it'd be similar to, well, in England, we call a clipper boat, but it's a traditional wooden boat built in Galway, and it was used to transport turf. And actually, really interesting, my boat captain, Dara Bailey, his father was one of the last men in Galway to transport turf and seaweed.
Wow.
And other materials around Galway and around the bay and use them boats as transportation. And his dad passed the knowledge on to Dara, and Dara is now managing this swim from the seafaring aspect. So it's great kind of passing down of history, culture, all that kind of things. And, you know, the boat gets amazing attention, any port, anywhere it gets, it pulls into, you know.
Sure, and you're living and sleeping on that boat in between the swims. Now, swimming, as with any sport, is full of sports science and nutrition, but I understand, speaking to your mum, that sometimes you're not exactly having the most nutritional of meals from the fishermen, is that correct?
Well, fishing a lot off the boat and catching our food. We did that a lot on the West Coast. So kind of mackerel sandwiches, you know, we had a chef on board for a while, one of my good friends, and we were eating very, very well. Then it kind of goes to more of a smaller crew, and it goes back to maybe even ham and cheese sandwiches, cups of tea, stuff like that. Just any calories that we can really get. I love myself cooking. I love food. I love the process of it and sitting down and having a meal with the whole crew. I think that's a really... it's a great thing that we do, and not get too stringent too on our nutrition. I think it's there to be enjoyed food. We have amazing produce here in Ireland, so we try to use what's local to us as much as possible.
Sure, and how difficult is it to eat or drink while you're swimming? Do you just tread water and hold a sandwich in one hand or something?
That's basically it, yeah. I tread water and then a sandwich gets handed to me every hour or two. So yeah, we usually take a break every hour to eat. So I'd have a sandwich, I'd have flapjacks, or I'd have something. I just like eating solid food, and then water and or tea or coffee if it's cold, and then keep going until the next hour, and then something else.
Sure. And over the past 4 months, you've been blessed by some amazing hospitality around the coast of Ireland too, haven't you?
Oh, we have. You know, that's really got us around the country, you know the west coast up to the north coast of Ireland, down to the east coast, and now on the south coast. You know, we've had great hospitality and people coming out with us, local fishermen, knowledge, things like that is invaluable.
If conditions go well, when do you anticipate finishing back home in Galway?
The end of October is our anticipation if things go well.
Well, if you achieve it, this will be a Guinness World Record?
Yes, it will, yeah. It will be a first.
And how do you feel about that?
Haven't done it yet, so I'll get back to you on it when I do it. But I think, look, I suppose that's not the main reason for it. I think it's great to have, and it's an amazing thing to have, but I think the whole journey itself is so special that, you know, I wouldn't want that to outshine it either, you know. So
talking Rotary, because this is a Rotary podcast, but you are a member of the Rotary Club of, is it Galway Salt Hill?
Yes, been a member for 2 years now, and they've been amazing. Be a member and try and give back, because I've received so much in different endeavours and things like that. So it's a great kind of community of people that we all kind of band together and try and help out in our community there in Salt Hill and Galway.
And how are you feeling at this moment in time, Dara? I mean, it's 4 months into the swim. How's your body? How's your mind? How are you feeling?
My body is good. I got some pretty nasty chafing that kind of went under my arms, and they were in a place that infection can quite spread quite quickly. So actually a band of bad weather came in, and it was probably the best thing that happened, that we got a bit of break and we weren't able to swim for a while. So yeah, my body is quite good because I'm well rested. Mentally it's a very tough challenge, because swimming is is very mentally draining as well. Like, you can imagine being in the water for 6 hours, and it's quite a repetitive movement exercise. Even scenery sometimes is quite repetitive and, you know, quite plodding. So mentally it has been challenging, but it's like the weather, you know, it comes in waves and it goes, and you just have to kind of ride it out, and you have to be patient, and you have to have the temperance to know that this will pass, and then you get into a nice flow. It's really just about sticking in there, you know. The good times will come, and so will the bad times. So it's really just about sticking through both.
Well, Darry, you're on the last leg. You've got another month or so to go for swimming. We wish you the best of luck, and I look forward to catching up with you once you get back home to Galway.
Thank you so much, David. I look forward to it too.
We recorded that interview in mid-September when Darry was in Cork. So hopefully, by the time you're listening to this podcast, he'll be on the home stretch to Galway and close to the finishing line.
So, as we've taken a trip around Europe now, Marco, I'd love to ask you, is there a country that you haven't been to that you would love to go to?
Oh, there are many countries I would love to go, and thank you for the question. Especially in my area here for the Europe Africa office, we are talking about 114 countries. And you were mentioning, for instance, Prague. I have never been to Prague yet, so that would be one of the lists that I would wish to go there. Or Budapest. I haven't been to Budapest. There are many other countries, although I haven't been to Uganda, so Namibia. But Eastern Europe, Republic Czech, that would be, sure, one of.
Marco, you've got to go to Prague. I mean, I went there with an open mind. I thought it's a place in the UK. It's a place where a lot of guys and young women go there for hen and stag weekends. But the culture is just amazing. Prague is a must capital of Europe to go to.
It's on my bucket list.
And I think Doncaster will be way up there as well. Peter will be waiting to welcome you to Doncaster Rotary Club.
Once we open Doncaster Airport again, we'll have a lounge as well.
I thought Doncaster, is it not? It's called the Robin Hood Airport, isn't it?
It's Robin Hood, but it was closed about 3 years ago. But there's voluntary efforts now to reopen it. So they're thinking 27, 28, it might reopen.
So here's the challenge, Peter. Sell Doncaster to Marco. Why should he come to Doncaster, apart from the Moat House Hotel, which you've already bigged up? What is there in Doncaster to get excited about?
Oh, you've got a race course, and we've got the St. Ledger. So that's a major
thing. One of the flat classics, yeah.
Yes, it is, yeah.
I actually have a question about this. In the last week, a couple of people, clients that I still have in Doncaster,
right,
had commented to me about the change of the weather and said something about a saying that the weather changes with the tail of the last horse in the last race or something like that. Have you ever heard this?
No.
I thought it was only me.
But Doncaster isn't a microclimate. So it is different. I mean, if you go to Sheffield, which is only, 20 miles away, it's always cold and more windy. It does have a microclimate.
Yes, and I think something that maybe is quite unique about the UK as well, Marco, I don't know if you're aware, the accent changes very quickly over a short distance of time. Mm-hmm. Is that your experience of countries such as Germany or Switzerland?
Oh, definitely. Well, I have to quickly say something. First of all, in Switzerland, as we speak, four official languages, right? So we have German, French, Italian, and Romansh. And among the Swiss Germans, you know exactly from which state you are coming when we talk the Swiss German. So I'm actually here in Zurich, but I'm not from Zurich. I'm from Basel. So when I start speaking Swiss German, they know exactly that I'm from Basel.
All right.
I think Swiss German is almost unintelligible, isn't it? If you've learnt German at school in Schule, it's fairly easy. But when you listen to someone speaking Swiss German, it's such a different sort of language, isn't it?
It depends which canton, yes. And the Swiss German is, which Swiss German is Swiss German, right? So we don't say we speak Swiss German. We say we speak Basel German, or the Zurich German, or the Bern German. So we don't use the Swiss German in general, yes, but it's sometimes we use words that the other canton does not understand them.
Can I just draw you on a sort of more serious subject? I mean, I know Alicia was talking earlier about how Rotary looks in Europe, and clearly one of the most pressing challenges that all Rotarians face, and it must clearly be the number one priority on your desk each day, is membership. And I know that in Germany, for example, that membership has actually turned into a positive, so that there has been good recruitment there. Sorry to catch you cold with the question, but are you aware of why Rotary in Germany is succeeding in a way that maybe elsewhere in Europe it's struggling a little bit?
You are right. It's absolutely amazing, great news that Germany is always going up. We are nearly at 60,000 members, but now 58,000. It's my biggest country regarding members number in Europe and Africa. And Germany has not only the highest number of membership in my head, but it has also the highest retention rate. And that's the key, but that's worldwide. Number one or number two worldwide of the retention rate. And this is something, because become Rotarian Germany, it takes time. And once you are in, you stay in the club. So they have waiting lists, and they make it very if you are with this in this new group, in this new club, then you stay until the end of your life. So that is an amazing concept, and it's working in Germany.
That's amazing. I'm finding that quite extraordinary. I mean, here the expectation is I reach my 40s and think it's a rowing club. That's clearly very difficult, and a very different bridge to gap, isn't it?
I know, just to cut in, that in Great Britain and Ireland we have a problem here where of retention in the first couple of years, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we have quite a high number of Rotarians who we lose in the first couple of years. And I know that the drive, I'm looking you here, Peter, looking right at the Doncaster experience as well, but the drive clearly is that while we are always looking at membership growth, how do we keep those members?
I think you have to be as flexible as possible, and you need to ask people why they're thinking of leaving. What are the issues? Sometimes it's family, sometimes it's work, but I don't think we fully understand yet why people aren't retained within Rotary.
Why do you do Rotary? What's in it for you?
I've been a Rotarian now for 30 years or more, been president twice, secretary for 6 years, so it's something that, you know, I really enjoy. I get the camaraderie as well from meeting people, working in the community, not so much these days, but I really do enjoy Rotary and the people that I meet. It's a friendship thing as well.
Marco, how did you start with Rotary?
That's a very good question. I started with Rotary. First of all, a staff member, right? So I have two hats, no? And I was a staff member. And then when I became the manager of the Europe Africa office, the former general secretary asked me, Marco, you need also to become Rotarian. And then I said, is that not the interest of conflict, being client and staff at the same time? He said, no, you have to understand how Rotary works also outside of the secretariat. And I was lucky, it was just a Rotary club in Zurich. They chartered a new club, not the one that I'm now in, and they asked me if I can become a member there. So I joined and become a charter member from the beginning of a new club.
And what drew you to the role in the first place with the office?
I started working for Rotary, believe it or not, in 1996. So next year I will celebrate 30 years of anniversary. And I was the IT manager of the Europe Africa office. So if you go back to 1996, I helped Rotary International in Europe and Africa to make the transfer from 99 to 2000.
Wow.
So everybody, if you remember, perhaps there were issues with the computers and the dates were 00. I implemented a new enterprise solution for Rotary International, and this is what was my entry to Rotary, and then later the manager.
God, that was the start of the computer age, wasn't it, Peter?
Yeah, everybody thought the world had come to an end in 2000, didn't they?
But I can remember like those modems, those squeaky modems in 1996.
Yeah.
And when you look at some of the old films, my gosh, 30 years ago, and you see the primitive laptops that they're using, and you think, how did we survive?
Oh, I don't know.
Floppy disks.
floppy disks. Yeah. Yes, I once remember backing up my computer on a floppy disk.
When I came here, Rotary International here, they had the old, for membership data, they had an old server, that was an IBM S36, if I'm not mistaken, and they had two hard disks, and the two hard disks were 200 mega big, but the weight was amazing.
Yeah.
Was, each hard disk was 42 kilos, smartphone.
A small mobile phone, where would we be without it? Yeah. But also maybe that is the, our future, that's the way that we need to connect, and which is why we're doing this podcast, for example. It's a way of connecting with people. Mm-hmm. Final question to you both gents, really, and because we're closing on time, but if you were to sort of look into your crystal ball, where do you think Rotary will be in, not necessarily 100 years' time, because that's difficult to predict, but in a decade's time, in 10 years' time, where will Rotary be in Europe and in this country? If I ask you first, Marco, and then Peter second.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope in a peaceful world, especially in my area, where I'm responsible for, I will actually extend it, not only in Europe, but it will be amazing. I have only 8 years to go for my retirement, so if it's before the 10 years, but I would love to hear WHO declaring the world polio free, and we all can celebrate in Geneva this huge milestone after the smallpox being eradicated and polio. That would be amazing. So that would be my dream to see that.
I can feel that people listening to this podcast will be agreeing with you there. Peter, what are your thoughts? 5-10 years time, where will Rotary be?
Well, I'd like to be positive because I'm generally a positive person, but there's a lot of negatives at the present time with Rotary clubs losing members and Rotary clubs closing. We have to do something different. We have to do something to attract younger people and to keep younger people. We've lost a lot of members because of family commitments and things like this, and the world has changed since I joined 30 years ago. When we didn't have any difficulty recruiting, we had over 60 members, you know, now we're down to 24 or so. And it's like that across all the Rotary clubs that I'm aware of the vast majority, let's put it that way. So we have to do something amazingly different, and maybe Marco could give us a few tips because I'm a bit lost.
But hopes, what would you like to see in 5 or 10 years' time?
Well, I'd like to see the Doncaster Rotary Club still surviving and flourishing. Whether or not it will be, I don't know. And I'd like to see, maybe one of the things we can do is to set up brand new Rotary clubs with new ideas. In Doncaster, they've set up Rotary club linked to the rugby union club, Doncaster Knights. And let's see how that works. I mean, it's linked to a sports event, but, you know, it may work. And that's a breakfast club. We're a lunchtime club still. I think lunchtime clubs are very difficult for people to attend unless they're retired. And to get people to an evening club, I mean, particularly if they've got young family, that tends to be difficult as well. So there's a lot of challenges for Rotary in Britain to actually keep members, but also to recruit new members. And I don't think my story will be a surprise to you.
No, but challenges that are surmountable.
Yeah.
Well, lots of ideas to ponder there. But our 60-minute journey around Europe is almost right. Up. Marco, could you just, for when we come over to Zurich, could you just let us know how to say "Hello, I'm a Rotarian" in the four language?
Oh, hello, I'm a Rotarian. Okay.
Yes.
Hallo, ich bin ein Rotarier. That would be German. Bonjour, or hello, je suis un Rotarien. That would be French. Buongiorno, sono un Rotariano. That would be Italian. And hola, buenos dias, yo soy un Rotario. That would be Spanish.
I'm going to listen back and study those. I don't know what the automated little captions are going to make of all of that. Let's find out. But thank you so much, Marco, Nicosia, Peter Aldridge from Doncaster, and Darren Morgan, swimming around the island there. So thank you for playing your part in this very entertaining and European version of Unscripted.
Possibilities are all around us. We see potential in unexpected places. And when we share our knowledge, vision, and connections, we turn great ideas into action. Together, we can make real change happen. We're Rotary. We are people of action. Get involved today at rotary.org/action.
Many thanks to Danny, who has been at the controls, and to Swindon 105.5 for allowing us to record in their studios.
So I can hear you thinking, what's ahead, Dave? Well, looking ahead to November, we will be streaming not one, but two podcasts in November. One is a Rotary Foundation special featuring the chair of Rotary Foundation trustees, Holger Nark, which we've already recorded and will be made available in November to coincide with Rotary Foundation Month. Really fascinating chat. We caught Holger just as he'd come back from Pakistan. So there was some interesting information there about how polio is going on there. And we will be back in Swindon next month to record an episode with a focus on polio. We've been talking about that just now, where once again, we'll be dialing into Switzerland, moving from Zurich with Marco to Geneva to meet Dr. Jamal Ahmed, director of the World Health Organization's Polio Eradication Program.
So that's November's episode of Unscripted to look forward to. We really hope that you will join us then.
Thank you very much and goodbye.
You've been listening to Unscripted, the official podcast for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland. If you'd like to find out more about Rotary or join us, visit rotarygbi.org. You can also read more stories in the Rotary magazine at magazine.rotarygbi.org. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps to spread the word. And we'd love you to share this podcast with friends, family and colleagues, inside and outside of Rotary. You can also email comments or suggestions to editor@rotarygbi.org. This podcast has been recorded at the studios of Swindon 105.5.